This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speaker today was the Secretary of the Illinois Department of Human Services, Grace Ho. Grace has served under Governor J.B. Pritzker as Secretary of the Illinois Department of Human Services since April of 2019. The mission of the Illinois Department of Human Services is to strengthen Illinois by building up lives and communities through an integrated network of mental health, substance use prevention and recovery, rehabilitation, development disabilities, family and community services. That's quite a challenge. The Illinois Department of Human Services operates 7 psychiatric hospitals, 7 developmental centers, 1 treatment and detention facility for sexually violent persons, and 76 local offices and 4 schools. Before joining as Secretary at the Illinois Department of Human Services, Grace Ho served as the Assistant Secretary from 2003 to 2012. During that time, she was an architect of Illinois' Immigrant Integration New Americans gubernatorial executive order, which has been nationally recognized. Most recently, she served as the president of the Woods Fund in Chicago for the last 7 years, a foundation that funds and projects programs to assist communities to fight the brutality of poverty and structural racism. Earlier in her career, Grace Ho was the executive director of the Chinese Mutual Aid Association. She's a child of immigrants from Taiwan, has lived and worked in Illinois since she was 8 years old. She studied at the University of Illinois and is the board chair of the Healthy Communities Foundation, a member of the Chicago Network, the Commercial Club, and a German Marshall Fellow. She began her address by saying that the Pritzker government is making a very strong commitment to human services and effective management. They've been understaffed for the last 7 years, so they are working with Central Management Services to add quality and diverse staff members to the Department of Human Services. They have very big challenges because of divestment and mismanagement under the previous gubernatorial administration. She said, "We must fix the above. We must make Illinois stronger." She said, "Even we have a mediocre website. If there's anybody out there who will offer us pro bono help to bring our website to where it should be, we would love to talk to you." Grace Ho said, "Sometime during our life, we will all or probably know people who need Department of Human Services services." Right now, she said, "Our department is like jumping into Lake Michigan in the middle of winter. We need to build a solid, diverse team and return to a house that was improperly ransacked under previous administrations." So far, they've been able to decrease a long and large Medicare backlog by 35,000 people in just 6 months. Families eligible for child care, they've increased that number by 10,000 in less than 6 months. Rebuilding is going on. We need to design programs that reflect equity, Secretary Ho said. We have to become an advocate for those whom we serve. She talked about the need to digitize and updating technology in her agency. She said, "We're still paper heavy. We even have some carbon paper laying around. Our hospitals do not have electronic medical records, even though we have 7 hospitals that we are responsible for. We need to increase our outreach services, and we have to adopt new tools and resources so that people understand that we are there to benefit everyone in society. This is a very difficult job that Secretary Ho faces, and we wish her the best."
Good afternoon, everyone. It's such a pleasure to be here with you this afternoon, and thank you to City Club J board members for inviting me. It really is an honor, having been in the audience so many times before. It's also a great honor for me to serve as the Secretary of the Illinois Department of Human Services. I say this often, but I really believe that it's true that I'm a privileged person and that I'm able to make a living doing something that I choose to do, that I feel deeply fulfilled by that, and that has reverberations that are very wide. Furthered, I'm honored to be a part of Governor Pritzker's administration, one that demonstrates strong management and leadership, and one that has a strong commitment to human services and human dignity, these two things that are deeply and inextricably intertwined. Thank you all for being here in the audience. I see faces from my days of being an advocate, a provider, an organizer, from when I was assistant secretary previously, philanthropy, friends and colleagues, and current colleagues. I have the great pleasure of serving with Deputy Governor Flores and First Assistant Lizzie Whitehorn. It means a lot to me that you're here because I know how much we're dealing with on a daily basis. And of course, our amazing, strong DHS team, Hina Mahmood, Ryan Croak, John Schomburg. I think in a short amount of time at DHS, we've been able to build this very strong circle of trust, and we could not do this job without each other's back, so I appreciate you all very much. If you know me, you know I hate wasting time, so I'm hoping to make your attendance here worth your while, tell you things that you can't Google, okay? So when you leave here today, though, these are the three things that I want you to remember. So if you leave early, just say that you knew that these things were true. One is DHS and our partner agencies, community providers, are facing big challenges that were produced by years of, I'm sorry to say, mismanagement and divestment. But number two, we are fixing them. And number three, we, DHS, and our community partners are making Illinois better and stronger. And so when I say DHS, I actually mean also our community providers, so please know that. So I have four broad areas to cover. So number one, for those of you who don't know me well, I'm going to share a little bit about who I am and the context for how I approach the work and why. Number two, what is DHS and why all Illinois residents should value and protect our mission and our work. Number three, what I walked into 6 months ago, the state of DHS and human services. And number four, of course, where we are going to go together. I was reading about like how to give a good speech, and they said, just say at the beginning where we're going. So that's where we're going. So one, I'm a child of immigrant parents. I've been a problem solver since birth. I was a caregiver and second mom for my little brother, and as I got older, a cultural interpreter for my parents. I'm my mother's daughter. My mother had always taught me to be humble, gracious, and generous, taking the smallest portions, kind of like Joy Luck Club, if you've seen that movie, being kind even those who are not kind to you, rejecting the notion of quid pro quo, rather valuing giving more than receiving, and that is a gift that has the greatest value. In my personal and professional life, I try to be kind and relentless in my pursuit of justice and fairness. If I'm in something, I'm all the way in. My career is threaded by service, starting at Kentucky Fried Chicken, Baker's Square, where I learned about the three-piece meal, a wing, a leg, and a thigh. It's just still true, and pies. And this has served me well. Then a political campaign, nonprofit service, organizing, advocacy, philanthropy, and government. So like a 360-degree view of ways to influence the public good, or the way my husband would say, to not make a profit. Yes. To advance others, to fight for and with the marginalized, to lift up the resiliency of the human spirit, to have hope that we care about each other as a society, to be in our business. We are mission-driven organizations. We are optimists, and we are fighters. So one other thing, I'm a hockey mom of two boys, 13 and 16. In addition to my day job, I'm co-manager for one of my son's hockey teams and a volunteer coordinator for the other. So, yes, I'm very busy. But enough about me. What is the Department of Human Services? We help and provide low-income working parents with secure, reliable, quality, and affordable child care, mental health care, hospitals for all, regardless of coverage, care, job, and life opportunities for people with disabilities, whether intellectual, developmental, sensory, mobility, or otherwise. Food security for children and older adults, services for people who are homeless or on the brink of homelessness, immigrants and refugees, youth, people who are victims of domestic violence and sexual assault, treatment for substance use or gambling use disorders, fight against the opioid epidemic, workforce development programs, early intervention, on and on. And these are just only a few of the services and supports we provide for Illinois. You can find much more about us on our very mediocre website. And that is generous. But rest assured, it's on the to-do list. We're willing to take pro bono help, FYI, as long as you're not doing business with the state already. What I'm trying to convey is that we need DHS. You need DHS. DHS and its partner organizations, state workers, and leaders are a key backbone to the heart, the morality, and an engine for strong Illinois. I believe that everyone in this room, either you directly or a member of your family, will need us one day. I have needed DHS. Illinois needs DHS to be solid and strong. We are far-reaching, deep and wide, across every part of the state, contracting with thousands of community and governmental providers. We have 7 24/7 mental health hospitals. We have 7 24 centers for people with developmental disabilities. We have 70-plus local public benefit offices and 40-plus voc rehab offices. We serve 1 in 3 people in Illinois directly, with almost 13,000 staff, almost $7 billion budget, thanks to the General Assembly and the governor this past year, through the 5 divisions that Jay had mentioned. So in order to talk about the future, it's important to talk about the what we walked into in March of 2019, coming back to the state after 7 years of philanthropy, which I truly loved. I loved the Woods Fund. I loved my colleagues in philanthropy, many of whom are here today. So coming from philanthropy and going to state government was a little bit like jumping into Lake Michigan in the middle of winter. Startling, scary, invigorating. 6 months later, the water is still very cold. It's warmed up a little, but mostly I've become acclimated to the water, and because I've been building a solid, strongly motivated, diverse team to share in this great responsibility. So a sample of my first days were this, and stay with me because it's a little wonky. We're working with Healthcare and Family Services on a federal corrective action plan for a Medicaid backlog that was as high as 120,000 people who were waiting to know whether they received Medicaid over 45 days. Can you imagine waiting to know for months only if you had health insurance? Responding to the Food and Nutrition Services Administration due to our lack of timeliness in processing SNAP, also known as food stamps. I walked right into a Legislative Audit Commission hearing that highlighted a plethora of the audit findings that we've had. We were in various degrees of noncompliance with 3 consent decrees. We had management vacancies all over the agency and a dramatic hollowing out of the child care assistance program, with only about a third of the families actually using the service that we have, and underfunding of our community providers, et cetera. Again, the list goes on and on. We don't have time to review all that is needed to be fixed. But I do want you to have a little bit of the flavor of the state of the state, because it's important to know the context from which we're building on. Returning to the DHS house after having been gone for 7 years was like coming back to a house that resembled the house that I used to live in, but it had been ransacked with a leaky roof and a compromised foundation. I know that there are high expectations for us to build up, upgrade the wiring, wallpaper, renovate right away. And I have high expectations to do this right away and fix everything. But, and, we are doing this and we will do this. But as you know, to build a strong foundation takes time. Simultaneously, we are also advancing. But you can't build a skyscraper when the foundation has been compromised. Please know that we are repairing and building at the same time, and in a short amount of time, we are seeing great progress. We are processing many human service provider rate increases. I know not at the rate that people hope. We have decreased the Medicaid backlog that I just spoke to you about already by 35,000 people. We have increased the timeliness of our SNAP application reviews from 65% when we walked in the door to over 90%. We've begun to wrap up marketing outreach for our programs, notably childcare, and we are increasing the number of families who will be eligible for child care, examining our ability to increase rates, which I know is a significant issue. Since the governor took office, already the number of families who are using child care increased by 10,000. We're building a strong and diverse team by race, ethnicity, disability, ability, experience, and background. We are working to engender trust between us so that we can benefit from the diversity of us rather than having it divide us. What I realized coming back was that trust was lost in our organization. Trust was lost in DHS, between DHS and its community providers. And that's something that I'm also deeply focused on. I can't emphasize that enough. We need your trust in our ability, capacity, and commitment to do the hard things. And I can only do that through honesty. I'm not going to sugarcoat where we are and make empty promises because there are no magic wands. I actually did get a magic wand last week. It was plastic, though, and there was no magic. Our team is earnest. We have community roots, and we reflect the way our state looks. And I know that it takes a relentless commitment to equity, human dignity, kindness, and expediency, and honesty to actually make a difference. I see and feel the hope in me, the Department of Human Services, and the governor's administration. This hope that many have in us, in our administration and the governor, I believe is founded. This last session under his leadership and in partnership with the General Assembly was quite remarkable. There is more to come, and yet the issues that we are confronting are actually really true and immense. So where are we going? Number one, we're rebuilding infrastructure, personnel, and trust. Number two is we're advancing equity. All the tenets that I learned from my days at Woods in terms of having government incorporate a racial equity lens. We need to identify need. We need to design and implement programs in a way that incorporates racial equity, geographic equity, equity as it relates to citizenship status, etc. Number three, we need to advocate for those we serve. We are also a voice, internally and externally. For example, the Department of Human Services, we just over the past 6 months have lodged complaints and comments against federal public charge changes that will drive immigrants to disenroll from public benefits here in Illinois. We had two meetings with the Trump administration to convey our concerns about these rule changes. Due to the chilling effect of these federal public charge rule changes, we expect that about 144,000 Illinoisans will disenroll from benefits for fear that it could jeopardize the immigration status of a loved one. This is an unjust choice to force upon Illinois immigrants. We also oppose the rule because of the additional costs and administrative burden it creates on us and community-based health and human service providers, and because of the huge economic impact that will result from widespread disenrollment. So it impacts lives, but it's also a cost to the state. Our preliminary estimate suggests that the state stands to lose between $53 and $123 million in SNAP benefits, food stamp benefits, and that uncompensated care borne by Illinois healthcare providers could approach $700 million. I want also DHS to become DHS, to meet our mission to provide integrated system for people who need us. One door for services. That was our charge 20 years ago, and we need to advance that. What I found, and what many of you know, is that the more categories that you fill, if you're poor, if you're low income, if you're limited English speaking, if you have disability challenges, there are more and more doors that you have to knock on in order to meet your needs. So efficiency, streamlining processes, digitizing and using technologies. We are still very, 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 very paper heavy. So what I actually just learned this morning is we've had the technology to implement digital electronic signatures. We had the technology. We were not using the technology. So we are advancing the directive with John Schomburg's help in order to actually take advantage of digital signatures. I know that's so boring, but it's actually really exciting for us. Got to take them where they are. With our strong management and tenacity, we will identify and build additional efficiencies like electronic medical records. No, we do not have electronic medical records. And yes, we have 7 hospitals. We're going to do better. Number 6 is partnership, working with philanthropy to create flexibility and resources to innovate and take risks and to be able to allow us to pivot and to meet our shared goals together. I want to work with businesses and the for-profit sector to work on shared goals of strengthening Illinois. Your employees use our services and need them to be productive and healthy, and your employees are also our clients. Finally, we need to listen. Our providers, our employees, and the people we serve, right? Nothing about us without us. Give voice and see that our families are the experts and they know what they need. If you ask the very poor what they want, it's 40 hours of work, a stable schedule, enough to feed their family. I don't think it's too much to ask. So with this to-do list, that was 7, we're implementing a truly significant effort simultaneously. The governor and the Illinois General Assembly budgeted $29 million to the Department of Human Services to implement an Illinois census outreach effort. The governor signed the census executive order that launched our efforts with the largest investment towards a complete count this year in the country. So DHS, in partnership with the governor's office and a bipartisan advisory group and our sister agencies, have begun the implementation. The call for the regional partners across the state just closed on Friday, and we are pleased with the demonstrated interest. I cannot tell you who they are, though. We are leaning on my former philanthropic colleagues, experts, and state staff to lead the review of these proposals. Thank you for answering the call. And we want to ensure that the review panel reflects the diversity of our state and the hard-to-count communities. I'm also happy to announce the names of the governor's 2 appointed co-directors of the Illinois Census Office, Marshanta Wilkerson and Oswaldo Alvarez, a graduate of Philanthropy University. Their combined experience with the legislature, philanthropy, community organizations, law with a state lens will be invaluable to our work. So there's a lot at stake with an effective census effort, I think you all know. We have to fight against the tide of fear that has been pervaded by the federal government. We want to work with trusted organizations to make this happen. In 2015 alone, Illinois received over $19 billion from the federal government, which is about $1,500 per person. So even a 1% undercount would result in the state losing $19 million per year per decade. Per decade with a total loss of $195 million. That's just 1%. So we need all of you. Please stay engaged with us at www.census.illinois.gov. Excuse me. So before I close, I want to talk about Marka Bristow. As many of you know, Marka, the founder and longtime president and CEO of Access Living of Metropolitan Chicago, recently passed away on September 8th. She was a warrior and a trailblazer for people with disabilities. She was a friend and an advisor. Like many in this room, I mourn for Marka's passing, but I draw comfort from the blueprint for a more accessible society she shared with all of us. Here in Chicago and literally around the world, advocates know Marka worked every day of her adult life to ensure justice for all. She helped make the Americans with Disabilities Act possible, and her relentless, clear voice gave thousands of Americans with disabilities new independence and dignity. And in this way, Marka boiled the ocean. Yet there is so much more to do. We have to do more, and we have to do better, much better, by people with disabilities. Put simply, families wait too long for services they deserve, whether it's voc rehab, developmental disabilities, assistive technology, independent living, housing transitions. Thousands of people are on waiting lists and have asked to navigate an impossible complex system to achieve basic dignity, reasonable accommodations, and the support we would all want for ourselves and for our loved ones if they should ever need them. And yet, I remain optimistic and exhilarated about the Illinois Department of Human Services because we have so many tools and resources that allow us to do something about it, to make new housing, to new accessible housing options possible, to support basic transportation and educational accommodations, to support fair and meaningful work opportunities for people with disabilities. Marco Bristow challenged me and guided me and so many others to make our state better, to remember our people with disability who are neighbors and loved ones, and along with my colleagues and Governor Pritzker's unwavering support, I can and I will. For Marka and the millions she spent her life calling upon all of us to put at the center and never at the margins of our work. I saw her just a couple of weeks before she passed. We were together at a community meeting that was focused on the Olmstead consent decrees that she helped initiate that required the state to transform our human services system to prioritize community living over institutional settings. As with many things, the state has been in noncompliance for the past several years, and when I came into this role, I had the goal of working to guide us to a better path. At this meeting, we were able to find a quiet moment alone where she shared with me that she only had a short time to live. She said that she was not scared. She said that as a person with disability, and this is something that will stay with me, that as a person who's lived with disability almost all her life, the notion of health for her was also was always very precarious. She was curious about what was to come, and her courage astounded me at that moment and continues to astound me. So the courage of so many human services warriors has enabled our system to continue to advance despite turbulent years. We know that publicly funded human services is important to a civilized society and advances equity where injustice lies. That is the hope. That is the hypothesis, and I think that is the fact. Human services benefits all residents of a society and signals the moral imperative of a society. And with that, please know that, one, DHS is indeed facing big challenges. Number two, we are fixing them. And number three, we are and will make the state better. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary Ho. If anybody has any questions, this is the time. Hold up your blue form. Our staff, Amanda, I see one back there and one back there in the left field corner over there. We'll try to answer as many of these as we can. Ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is from Therese McMahon. Therese, where are you? Right down there. Oh. Literacy DuPage. We're more than Cook County at the City Club, you know. What are your plans for the Illinois Welcoming Centers in DuPage County?
Thank you, Terry. So as many of you may know, when I was Assistant Secretary for Programs at DHS, I worked closely with the Governor's Office as well as the Illinois Coalition for Immigrant and Refugee Rights actually to create the first new Americans executive order in the country that would signal as well as provide policies and practice so that immigrants and refugees might take advantage of the strengths that they have for the state. And so there are two pieces of the Welcoming Center that I'm going to answer. One is at the State Department of Human Services, we're actually rebuilding the office of the Welcoming Center and having it work very closely in tandem with the Bureau for Refugee and Immigrant Services. At another level, I know that there was a piece of legislation that was advanced that would create the Welcoming Center leadership in the Governor's Office. And since Sol and Lizzie and I have been talking about how to advance that work in a complementary way with the work at the department.
Okay. Just going through some of these questions. We have some really good questions here. Okay. This is from Kirsten Charnosky. Kirsten, where are you? You're here?
Oh, right over there. Great. Okay. She even prints so I can read this question. That's very good. With the Erie Neighborhood House, you spoke to the advocacy DHS is doing to push back against the Trump administration. Now, USCIS is no longer funding community organizations that do not use E-Verify. How will you continue to protect Illinois families and nonprofits from this and other harmful policies?
Thank you. That's a good question. So beyond advocacy and communication with the federal government, the Department of Human Services also made additional grants to our strong set of immigrant and refugee providers through the Welcoming Center grants, as well as the IFRP, The former outreach and interpretation providers, which is our landscape of strong immigrant refugee service providers, to do the work on the front lines. And so I think one of the things that I really recognize around these issues with public charge is that individuals who are potentially impacted by public charge are not going to come running to our offices. They're going to go to Erie House. They're going to go to Chinese Mutual Aid. They're going to go to Chinese American Service League. So they are the messengers, and those are the organizations that we are going to fund actually to protect and inform our service providers. And so at the same time, obviously, there's a lot of training and capacity that we need to do internally as well, and we're going to continue to that. But I'm going to say that we're going to lean on our robust community service system.
Okay, thank you. Okay. This is from Ed Guerra from Elgin Township. Ed, where are you? Right back there. Okay. He's not sure if he's a member or if he's not, but Ed, if you're not, $50, you become a member of our club. Okay, we'll give you a pass this time. Secretary, he'd like to know, what is your stance regarding possible privatization of administrative duties within DHS?
Privatization of administrative duties. That's a really broad question, so maybe we can talk more about this afterwards. I guess it depends on what, you know, your definition of privatization. So I would say over the course of many years, I think many of us know, we rely on community providers to provide a lot of the community care. So some may call that privatization, some may call that partnership. As it relates to administration, I would say that I think it's important to have a really strong, full-time, permanent state staff providing the functions of the state. And that is something that we are building and trying to advance. At the same time, for all the reasons that I shared with you, we are a little bit challenged in our ability to provide the administrative support and backbone that the state needs. And so for a period of time, we are going to try to rely on, I guess, private partners to help us get back on our feet. I think at the end of the day, it's a partnership. So, you know, I never talk in extremes. That was actually an extreme statement. I try not to speak in extremes. So I never say never about this, and I never say never about that. You know, for me, I'm just trying to, in a very short amount of time, make the changes that everybody's expecting and actually that everybody needs.
Okay, thank you. Good question. Great answer.
Thank you.
This is from Christine Park. Christine, where are you? Back there. She'd like to know, what should we be doing in health professions education to move the needle in our state's health care?
That's a good question. I think one of the things that we are challenged with as human service or healthcare providers is this equity gap, this health equity gap. And I think that, you know, the Kids Count report just came out this morning and again kind of brought forth this notion that the health outcomes for young children and babies are really very much related to the color of their skin. And so I would say that if we are truly going to kind of attack that and eliminate it, that the healthcare profession potentially, and this is something that I'm kind of going out on a limb on, needs to really focus on equity and what that means from a frontline service delivery system. And obviously, there needs to be a 360-degree view in support of that as well. So I hope that was helpful.
Okay. Thank you, Christine, for that question. This is from Ramona Burris. She's not with us. This came in via the Internet. What's the decision behind cutting SNAP benefits for male recipients, especially in the current times of dealing with food insecurity? Many of these men suffer from chronic health conditions that necessitate nutrition and diet control. Okay.
So many of you may know that the Trump administration is trying to make dramatic changes in who is eligible for SNAP or food stamps and who is not eligible. And one of the rules that has actually been in various forms of discussion has to do with eliminating SNAP benefits for individuals who are not able to work. And so this population that we wonky people call ABODs, which is able-bodied adults without dependents, they are on the brink of not being able to access food stamps anymore or on a very limited basis unless they're doing work. And so I can't speak for the Trump administration, but I think it's this notion of, you know, pulling up your bootstraps and you're not going to get any public benefits until you can demonstrate that you deserve it. There's nothing wrong with, I think, kind of hard work and tenacity, but I think what it doesn't take into consideration are the lives and the challenges that people face in order to actually do work. I think if you ask anybody who is marginalized or who has challenges before them, what do they want? They want a job. And so I think we are the Department of Human Services. We want to provide them with the tools and the resources they need in order to become self-sufficient. The SNAP benefits is not a reason not to work. If any of you have ever taken the SNAP challenge, which is just to live on SNAP, you'll know that you'll be having a lot of ramen noodles and macaroni and cheese. So that is not kind of the reason why people are continue to live in poverty. So I would say that's what I would say.
Thank you, Secretary. These are tough questions.
It's
like a PhD oral exam, you know? Okay.
Do I walk out of the doctor?
Absolutely. We will robe you. Of course, at the University of Chicago, they ask you to step out in the little hall, and you can hear your examiners talking behind closed doors, and all you can hear are the negative things that they are saying, and you're positive you failed, but then they open the door and they say, "Welcome to the club." Okay. These kind of two people ask similar questions. They're related. Terry Weaver with UIC, University of Illinois at Chicago, and City Club member Michael Bailey. The plans for improving correctional health in state correctional facilities. And Michael asked, if disability is not a crime, why does it appear that many of us are locked up? Do you care to deal with that question?
Those two.
Yeah.
So we have a new director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. I think he's just started a couple months ago, and we've already had the opportunity to talk and really figure out how we can better coordinate. I think that when people are leaving the correctional institutions, I think the Department of Corrections still thinks of them as their community folks for a period of time, but we also consider them our community folks for a period of time. So I think we do need to kind of band together and better plan out what services look like for people who are reentering. I think as it relates to kind of services for people with disabilities, I talked about kind of our work on the Olmstead Consent Decrees, which really pushes the state to advance more community living options for people with disabilities. And so I know and I named that we are deeply challenged in being able to produce the compliance numbers that we are looking to see. And so we've been working very closely with our community providers as well as our sister agencies to actually get us on the right track into compliance. Mm-hmm. And obviously it's not just about compliance and not being called before the judge, but it's actually producing a system that works better for all people.
Thank you. Okay. This is from the Civic Federation's Lawrence Massal, so you can be prepared. Plus, he's setting you up. Thank you for returning to state service. I think all of us would agree to that. How will the parents of children with special needs or mental health services be able to tell that there is a long-term commitment to the services they need in Illinois, but seem easier to secure in Michigan, Iowa, and other states?
I thought you liked me, Lawrence.
You got to remember, he started with the James Thompson.
No, I know, I know, I know. Lawrence Bissell was a board member of mine when I was at Woods Fund, so you're welcome. It's been a delight to return to state government. Very hard, but very important. So I would say that we recognize that this is a problem. I think we're working very closely with DCFS, the new director of DCFS, Mark Smith. The federal government has, put out new regulations or new family first, prevention first type structure. And so I think we're trying to figure out how DHS can work in partnership with DCFS, because there's a lot of overlap. I think the second piece of that is that I don't really have like a great answer to that. I think we, as I said earlier, one of the things that is really hard for the state to do is to deal with individuals and families who have a variety of complex needs. So if you don't cleanly fit only in one box, it's very challenging for us to kind of wrap around services. And so I think the work is yet to come, and the solutions are yet to be solved. And I think it's like a very complicated patchwork of things that we're going to have to put in place in order for families with children with disabilities to thrive. I believe that we have a very strong early intervention system for 0 to 5. I think we need to continue to strengthen special education programs for children in the school district, but then also we need to really figure out as a state what kind of residential options we want for children when they're not able to thrive in any of those settings.
Very good, Secretary. Now, Lawrence speaks here quite frequently. We put him on panels, and by himself, he's tremendous. And because he asked you that question, you're entitled to come back and ask him a question that causes him to squirm a little. Okay. This is from City Club member Dan Lustig. Dan, where are you? Right down there. He says there was a recent news article about a possible rate cut to providers. He'd like to know if it's true, but can you share any information on that?
I don't believe it's true. No. I don't know what area, but we're not in the process of making any rate cuts that I'm aware of. DHS.
Okay, that was quick. Okay. This is from Deborah Vines. She's the CEO of the Answer, Inc., Autism Awareness and Support Agency. Will there be any funding for autism agencies?
So it's not I'm sorry, I don't have a yes or no answer. I do know that we've been working over the past summer to really develop a better response to services for children, I think in particular with autism. And so we have a work group with our sister agencies, healthcare and family services, and we're developing kind of a menu of things that we as a state need to do better, in particular to support people with autism. And so we have a meeting coming up next month to kind of review that and discuss it with, I think, members of the Autism Task Force. So it's still a work in progress, and we'll see what comes from that.
Okay, we just have a couple more questions here, Secretary.
I think time's up.
Okay. Okay.
I'm joking. It's fine.
That's okay. If you said it. This is from Esther Maccione. Esther, where are you? She's right over there. She's with the County Care Health Plan. She'd like to know what your department's strategy is to collaborate with HFS and managed care organizations to improve redetermination adherence to ensure members do not lose Medicaid coverage.
So During my presentation, I talked about the challenges that we walked into with the backlog of Medicaid redeterminations. And so, you know, our sister agency, Healthcare and Family Services, we've been working very closely with them. And in fact, I was on conference calls before I even started to really develop what the multi-pronged action plan needed to be in order to drive down that backlog. And like many things, it's not one thing. So we worked closely with members of the General Assembly. They had a Medicaid task force. We met every morning, every Thursday morning at 7:30 a.m. At the Capitol to review what are the legislative actions that the General Assembly could take in order to help us advance, and that was passed and signed by the governor. At the same time, I think many of you know, we have an information technology system called IES that is challenged, is compromised, and we're working very closely internally and with our partners to correct the deficiencies in that system. So that's a part of it. We're increasing the number of staff at HFS, at DHS. I think that the reality is that we can't decrease a backlog with the same number of people. And so we are hiring new staff. We've been working with Central Management Services, which is our personnel agency, to streamline our hiring process and to drive that forward. And so we have this multi-pronged attack, and I think some of the things that we've been able to do right away, like manage the caseload better on the back end, is the reason why we've been able to see dramatic decreases on the back end. So I would say that management actually works. Management helps kind of drive efficiencies and solve problems, but that's not it. I think when you have a complex system like this, you also need technology to work, you need laws to change and policies to change. So we need to do all of that to actually begin to get down to zero.
Okay, Secretary Ho, now, as chairman, I get to ask the last question. You said that you have two teenagers who are into hockey and that you're like a volunteer coach and the assistant coach or something. So, it's obviously you follow hockey. Is there any possibility that the Chicago Blackhawks will make the playoffs this year?
So, I don't actually follow professional hockey. Yes, absolutely. There's a chance.
That was the right answer.